Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
The frost I saw during my morning commute this morning tells me that the colder seasons are here. While fall and winter offer lots of great outdoor activities, reasons for gathering and festivity, maybe one of the best ways to spend your time is with a good book curled up somewhere warm. We'll discuss cozy reading recommendations and book-related events today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
It's Talk of Alaska. I'm Madeline Rose, in for Lori Townsend. In this information age of social media algorithms, fast-paced video content, and endless online discussion, there's something refreshing about sitting down and enjoying a good old-fashioned book. Whether you're reading the physical thing, using an e-reader, or listening to an audiobook, literature has incredible power to tell stories and convey information. A well-written novel can change the course of a life, a nation, the world, or just provide you some nice entertainment for an afternoon. But that's enough waxing poetic, unless any of my guests today can recommend some good poetry. For now, I will introduce the fellow bookworms joining me for today's discussion. First, I'm joined by Christy Nelson. Christy is the Digital Services Librarian at the Anchorage Public Library. She oversees subscriptions for many of the digital services they offer, maintains the website, and still finds time to work at the reference desk. Christy, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm also joined by Vered Mares, owner of the Writer's Block Bookstore and Cafe in Anchorage. Before the Writer's Block, Vered worked in various other sides of the book industry, from design to editing. We'll hear some of that history during today's discussion. Thanks for being here, Vered.
Thank you so much for having me.
And a couple of quick notes. September is Library Card Sign-Up Month. If you're listening to this show live, you'll hear about a couple last-chance opportunities for some fun library events. But beyond that, Banned Book Week starts October 5th this year, and Hispanic Heritage Month is running September 15th through October 15th, and there are plenty of other great events going on this fall and winter for all of the book lovers listening. Housekeeping is out of the way. Thank you both for your patience. I want to lead with, I think, the best question to start this conversation. What are you reading right now? Christy, let's start with you.
Okay, so I actually have about three books that I have going at any given time. Like many people out there who use Libby, my holds all seem to arrive at the exact same time, so it happens to librarians too. I am just finishing up Midnight at the Blackbird Cafe, which is a really fun, almost like a Hallmark movie, kind of a hug of a book with romance and family intrigue and drama in that way. I have Once Upon a River is a historical fiction novel that I'm going to be starting here very soon, followed by Abundance by Ezra Klein.
All right. And you mentioned Libby. For those who might not know what that is, what is Libby?
Libby is the platform that we use for ebooks and audiobooks at the library. So you can check out ebooks and audiobooks through the Libby app with your library card.
All right, perfect. And Vered, before I turn to you, I do want to ask Christy, when you've got multiple titles that you're juggling like this, how do you prioritize?
I prioritize by due date. So that's a me thing, but I know there are some people who just can't wait to get to something, so they might shift around. But for me, I want to make sure that I get those books back on time, and I'm not left hanging with not finishing something.
Very understandable coming from a librarian. Thank you. Vered, what are you reading these days?
Oh, gosh. I have a pretty extensive nightside reading list, and I know I told you a couple of them initially, but I also started rereading The Shantaram by David Gregory. Gregory David, I cannot remember his last name. I'm terrible with names. Anyhow, The Shantaram. And then also a series by Ken Follett that I've been super interested in. And I've read it years and years ago, but it's also come back because we've been talking about it. And that was World Without End, and then the first part of that that my brain is also escaping me at the moment. Forgive me, my coffee's still kicking in. But those two are kind of very large. One's historical historical fiction, Ken Follett's book, and then the Shantaram is kind of a genre-bending quasi-memoir, quasi-fiction. It's listed as a novel, but I know that large portions of it are also memoir, and both very long reads, over 1,000 pages each, but they're both, you know, phenomenal, fun books. Pillars of the Earth, that was the one that I was thinking of.
and same question, you know, when you're juggling multiple titles like this, how do you decide what to read at any given moment?
Sort of based on my mood. Like, if I need something that's entertaining, then I'll go for that. Like, if I've had a really stressful day, I don't want to read something that's super heavy. And if I'm, like, frustrated with, you know, life or politics or something like that, then I might go for something that will kind of put me back in my happy space, you know, reading from the choir, so to speak.
So one word that comes up when we're talking about sort of reading this time of year, I think, Christy, you used it to describe Midnight at the Blackbird while we were discussing it earlier, is the word cozy. Obviously, we all like to be comfortable. I'm curious if either of you have thoughts sort of about what makes a book cozy. Christy, let's start with you.
I think cozy is sort of a personal thing. I mean, people can be cozy reading a true crime under a blanket with their favorite beverage. For me, cozy is kind of those books that just make you feel good when you're reading them. You know, things that doesn't necessarily have to be positive even, but just things that I'm glad I read that. I feel like I'm a better person because I read it. For me, that feels cozy.
All right. Vera, do you have any thoughts on cozy books?
Yeah, I think of cozy books as books that make you not want to get out of your chair or your couch or bed, whatever, you know, wherever you are comfortable and you're reading it and you might not do other things like, you know, the laundry can wait, cooking and cleaning can wait, shopping can wait because you're just so cozy, you know, all curled up with your book and you just need to keep reading. I think that's whatever the genre is. I don't think it really matters. It's just how the book affects you to want to stay where you are. It's good enough to hold your attention and transport you to that world instead of the rat race that we all live in.
So in some ways, a good book.
Yeah, a good book. Exactly, a good book.
Perfect. So, Christy, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but what does a digital services librarian do?
Well, so the library has a lot of, obviously, we have ebooks, we have audiobooks, we have a lot of digital content, and a lot of that is coming from different services that we have. So a large part of my job is making sure those things are actually working so that when you click on a link to a database on our website, it takes you where you want it to go. So there's that piece. There's I do the ordering of the ebooks and audiobooks for Anchorage for the Libby platform. So choosing and selecting those. And then the website, maintaining that website and making sure that it's functioning and that people are getting what they need from it.
All right. And so Libby is sort of one of the big digital services that you offer.
Yeah.
You mentioned to me a couple new ones recently, some very sort of practical ones.
Yeah, we have a couple of new databases that we're really excited about. The first one is called Law Depot. It is a free downloadable templates that you can customize and fill out for yourself. So if you needed to do a power of attorney or a lease agreement or, you know, a living will, things like that, you can check out access to Law Depot for 30 days and you have full access to all of their different templates. You can customize them, download your completed document. So it's a great service. There are a lot of services out there that say that they're free and then you fill it out and get all the way to the end and then they want you to pay money.
Mm-hmm.
And Law Depot doesn't do that. We've paid for that subscription. So you can get that through our website. You can go straight to our resources and it will be there under L for Law Depot. Or if you actually are using the Libby app for ebooks and audiobooks, you can actually check it out through Libby as well.
All right. And for folks who are outside of Anchorage, what sort of services does Anchorage Public Library offer, both digital and physical, that are sort of accessible statewide?
So the library catalog is sort of a statewide consortium. So about 90% of the libraries in the state are all sharing this one catalog. And so if you find something, if you are in Fairbanks and you see something that is only available in Anchorage, you can place a hold on that and have it sent to where you are. So that covers a lot of the state. We also have the Alaska Digital Library, which is what the Libby app accesses, and that's a shared consortium as well. So there are a lot of different libraries that are sort of paying into this system to have access to those ebooks. If you're in Anchorage, you get a few more that we purchase on top of those that are only available in Anchorage. But it is a shared collection there that most Alaskans can access.
All right. Thank you. Vered, turning to you for a little bit, tell us a little bit about your journey through the book industry and how you ended up opening the Writer's Block.
So I was raised by writers and in and around universities and libraries. My father was a writer. My stepmother was a writer. My uncle was a writer. My other uncle on the other side of the family was a writer. You start to kind of get the trend. I vowed I was not going to be a writer. I failed. I failed in that vow. And I ended up studying art, and then from art became a graphic artist, which led to being a book designer, which led to doing book editing, then publishing, and then a bookstore. And then ultimately an MFA from UAA's Low Residency Program in creative writing. So I failed miserably in my task to buck the trend of my family. And the writer's block was born from sort of the confluence of a few things. One, it was part of my graduate school practicum in which, you know, students do things to serve the community. And I started doing these kind of literary salon kind of things out of my living room. But then also with the help of my first partners, Tika Ballas and Donnell Smith, who had similar ideas for an art cafe and were also book lovers and tremendous readers. So that creative idea kind of came together, and with another person who's, I don't believe any longer here in Alaska, Kathy McHugh, who helped put it all together with us. And eventually the Writer's Block opened. But it started sort of in the seat of my living room, stumbling my way through my MFA.
You mentioned to me during a previous interview that you really wanted the Writer's Block to be sort of a safe space. Can you talk about what that means?
Yeah, so I think of safe spaces as a place where people from all walks of life, all shapes, colors, all genders, all political spectrums can have a place and a space to hold face-to-face gatherings, conversations, meetings, and share in a commonality of being human, whatever that might look like. And that also means having literature that is representative of a really wide variety of writers, women writers, LGBTQ writers, women writers that are from other countries, non-English speaking writers who are writing in other languages, minority voices, indigenous voices. It's really important to have all of that represented, because there's some phenomenal literature from so many different people. So to give space for that and to create an environment that is cozy, to bring back that word, with soft, comfy furniture, that means you don't necessarily want to get out of the chair, you want to stay in the chair. It invites people in and invites you to converse with people you may not have met prior to coming into our space. And I think we need that. And that's kind of always been sort of how bookstores and cafes have usually functioned in the community, is to be the place where people learn, contribute, and weigh the talk about the weighty matters of the universe. You know, they hold court, whether it's with a friend or the barista or a fellow book lover who's, you know, checking out the literary fiction or the poetry or the nonfiction.
All right. If you're just joining us, today we are discussing fall and winter reading recommendations, book-related events, and the general love of literature today on Talk of Alaska. I'm Madeline Rose, and my guests today are Christy Nelson, Digital Services Librarian at the Anchorage Public Library, and Vered Mares, owner of the Writer's Block Bookstore in Anchorage. So, There are lots of great resources out there. Varid, the writer's block has been open for a number of years now. I'm kind of curious if you've noticed sort of any changes in the way that the cafe operates, or you know, just any sort of learning experiences after sort of the initial impetus to open the store.
Boy, wow, yeah, that's a loaded question. So we are almost 8 years old, and we've definitely learned a lot. It's an endless stream of learning the depth of the ocean that you don't actually know anything about. That's sort of the whole, between the small business element, the kitchen, and the books, and the events, it's a really dynamic and constantly moving object that requires a lot of hands to help. So, you know, we used to operate with really long hours and stopped doing that because it was just too much. So now, you know, we're sort of not too early, not too late hours right now. Used to be open 6 days a week. Now we're open 5 days a week. You know, it mostly for the sanity of myself and the staff to be able to trim things down. But also, you know, listening to what the neighborhood wanted. You know, when we opened, we didn't know what it wanted to be when it grew up. We didn't know what kind of cafe or what kind of bookstore. And I don't think we're grown up now, but at least we now know our neighborhood and we know our community and we know the people who come and support us. And we know what they like and want. And that's sort of been the biggest thing, learning what works in the kitchen, how it works with events. You know, there's so many different moving elements that it's a constant education. It's a constant education every day. I learn something new every day. I learn about a new writer, or I learn about a new dish, or I learn a new process, or one of the baristas will come up with a new idea for trying to reorganize things to make the space better and cleaner and more functional. So yeah, it's a constant learning experience.
I suppose that sense of new learning is sort of what draws people to literature as well. Yeah. So we've talked a lot of sort of book adjacent things. I want to sort of circle back to the point of the show, which is to recommend books. So we've got Hispanic Heritage Month happening right now. There are some books that Anchorage Public Library is featuring. Christy, do you want to tell us about those?
Yeah, so this month we've been partnering with the local Latino Book Club, and they've been selecting titles from our collection to share out. We've been doing that on social media. So we have The Inheritance of Orquídea Divina by Zoraida Cordova. And that's just a beautifully written novel that's blending magical realism and family drama. There are some descendants of a matriarch who are sort of trying to figure out this legacy that she's left behind. So that's one. And then Clarity and Connection by Young Pueblo, which is a blend of poetry and short prose that's guiding through healing from past wounds and building deeper bonds. So it's really about stronger mental health and relationships and connection.
That sounds like a lot of relevant topics for this day and age.
Yes.
Perfect. Varid, anything going on for Hispanic Heritage Month?
I'm not going to go through all what the books are about because they have a pretty extensive list, but recommended Latino and Hispanic writers. I'm just going to run through it. Sylvia Morena, the much revered Mexican author of Mexican Gothic and Velvet Was the Night. She's a Mexican-Canadian author. Sandra Cisneros, whose book House on Mango Street was phenomenal. It's not a new book, but it's one that I think everybody should read. Also Mexican-American. Going back in time, Rudolfo Anaya, who wrote Bless Me Ultima, was ultimately turned into a movie from New Mexico. Phenomenal writer as well. Isabel Allende, House of Spirits or City of Beasts. She's a Chilean-American writer. Luis Alberto Urrea, who's a Mexican-American Pulitzer Prize-winning writer with The Devil's Share. Not The Devil's Share. The Devil's Highway. Devil's Share is written by an Alaskan writer, Chris Farman.
We'll get to Alaskan authors in a little bit.
And Naima Koster, What's Mine and Yours is a novel. She's Dominican-American. Gabriela Garcia of Women and Salt, who's a Cuban and Mexican writer. Crystal Maldonado, who's a YA writer. Fat Chance Charlie Vega, and from Puerto Rico, as well as two people very near and dear to me. My father, who was Ernesto Antonio Mares, who had written numerous plays. Enrique La Madrid, who was also a translator and had wrote a book, Amadito, the Hero Children. And crossing over, Indra Arriaga, who is also local, but whose recent book, Amoxli, which is Etymologies Apacas, just came out, also phenomenal. So that's kind of my quick list of recommended Hispanic writers.
Perfect. Thank you. And so, you know, a lot of those titles were in Spanish. For folks who are maybe not fluent with Spanish, are a lot of these titles, are there English translations or is it?
All of these are available. Yeah. All of these are either written directly in English or were translated and are definitely available in English, Spanish, and probably other languages as well.
So no excuse not to expand your literary horizons.
Yeah. They're all terrific writers.
All right. Christy, I want to back up a little bit. We talked about sort of Hispanic Heritage Month, which goes into October, but today is the last day of September, Library Card Sign-Up Month. It sounds like there is one last event going on tonight, if you're listening live.
Yes, if you have missed all of our previous Library Card Sign-Up Month events, our last one is tonight. It's called Scoops and Stories, and it is a book tasting event that is happening at Wild Scoops from 4:30 to 7:30 in Midtown. What we have done is over the past month, we have had a contest where people can design their own ice cream flavor based on their favorite book. And this year's winner, Wild Scoops picks a couple of finalists and then the public votes. And this year's winner is called It's Going to Be Amazing. And let me tell you, it is going to be amazing. This flavor is sweet cream base with shortbread cookies and chocolate marshmallow fluff. And it is inspired by The Rabbit Listened, which is just a very sweet picture book. So the chocolate marshmallow fluff represents the rabbit. And the shortbread cookies represent the blocks that are an important part of the book. So, that is happening today. It is a limited edition ice cream, so you're not going to be able to get this other than at this event. But the librarians will be on hand with more books to offer recommendations based on that flavor and other flavors. It should be a fun event with ice cream and books.
Sounds delicious. How does one go about designing an ice cream flavor or relating an ice cream flavor to a book?
So Wild Scoops gives some hints. They talk about they want you to choose a base and then your mix-ins. And a lot of it has to do sometimes with the characters or the scenery or just kind of the colors involved. Like last year, the winner was based off of the book Goodnight Gorilla. So it had bananas and peanuts in it.
Makes sense.
So this year, again, the chocolate marshmallow fluff is the bunny rabbit. So it just kind of depends on, what the book is and the characters and the feeling that you want to evoke with your flavor.
And it's too late for this year's event, but I understand there's also sort of in a similar vein, a kombucha and books event that the library puts on every September.
Yes. Also part of Library Sign Up Month is Booch for Books. And that is an event that happens at Zip Kombucha. We partner with them. They have designed special flavor of kombucha just for the library. It's called To Chai For. And actually, throughout the whole month of September, the proceeds from that particular flavor, a portion of those proceeds go to the Friends of the Library. And then at the event, we do another tasting. We sort of pair books with different flavors of Zip Kombucha so that you can sort of try your flavor and your book at the same time and taste a little of both. And we have little tasting cards where people can share their feedback about whether it paired well or not.
From a practical standpoint, that seems a little bit less messy than ice cream and books.
It is, but we also wanted to do something family friendly. So this one is for all ages. The Scoops and Stories is for everyone.
And I'm never going to complain about ice cream.
No one can complain about ice cream.
All right, so we've got a couple minutes before our first break. I want to take a second to talk about sort of the different formats we can read in. Vered, you've told me that you prefer a physical book. Why
Most
is that?
Most definitely. I like the object of the book for so many reasons. One, it requires no electricity or batteries, so it works all the time. And when you're really done with loving it to the point where the, you know, pages have sort of separated and become kind of dysfunctional, you can recycle it. So the physical book has always been my go-to. Books are beautiful. I mean, come on. You want books on your shelf. They're beautiful. They're well. They just fit right in your hand. But, you know, I read my news. I tend to read things that are like quick digestibles on my digital media. And then the things that I actually like want to keep and retain and cart around, those are the physical books. But honestly, I don't care if people are reading physical books, e-readers. I don't care if you listen to audiobooks. I just want you to read. Mm-hmm. That's it. I just want you to read, whatever that means.
And Christy, you've mentioned to me that you're kind of leaning more into ebooks and audiobooks these days. What do you like about those formats?
For me, a lot of it just has to do with lifestyle and just being really busy. And there are too many books to read and get to, and I can't get to all of them. I would love to spend all day just sitting and reading, which, contrary to what people think, that is not what a librarian does. So the audiobooks, I have the time, you know, when I'm doing other things to be able to listen and listen hard, because it's generally I'm choosing a task that doesn't require a lot of thought. So I can really listen to those books and absorb them. But I always have a couple of print books sitting there in my bag, because when I have the chance, I would love to sit and read. And so I do that as well. And I generally have some ebooks. Those are just so great for portability. You know, if you're taking a long trip and you're on an airplane, carting around a lot of books is harder to do. So I generally have a few of those on reserve as well, just in case. Those are my emergency books. So I'm not tied to any one format, but just lately I have been finding that audiobooks mean that I get to consume more, and as much more than I would have if I were just reading.
Well, that is certainly great. And you had also mentioned to me that you liked about ebooks that it's a little bit harder to skip ahead.
Exactly. I'm one of those people who will flip a few pages ahead and doing that, but I can't stop myself.
I totally understand.
It's harder to do that with an ebook, so it keeps me honest.
All right. Well, if you are just joining us, today we are discussing reading recommendations on Talk of Alaska. I'm Madeline Rose, and my guests today are Vered Mares, owner of the Writer's Block Bookstore and Cafe in Anchorage, as well as Christy Nelson, the Digital Services Librarian with the Anchorage Public Library. We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a moment to talk more book recommendations when Talk of Alaska returns. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Madeline Rose, in for Lori Townsend, and today we are discussing reading recommendations, Alaskan authors, books about Alaska, and many book-related events coming up in the coming months. Okay, so I gave you both a little bit of a heads up about this, but I wanted to ask you both for advice with a personal problem I have related to books. So I generally prefer physical books. I like to, before bed, turn off all of the screens in my house, all of the electronics, sit on my couch and read a physical book until I feel like I can't read anymore to help me fall asleep. My problem is my taste in books is just too good, and I find these great, exciting books that keep me up rather than help me fall asleep. And I'm wondering if either of you have advice for how I could get around this problem. Christy, let's start with you.
One of the things I like to do is read a book that I've already read. Mm. Something going back to some favorite book is sort of giving, again, that going back to cozy. You get that cozy feeling, and I already know what's going to happen. So I don't necessarily have to keep reading, but I know that I'm going to be comfortable. I know that I already like it. And it's just kind of a way to unwind without thinking too much about what's happening next.
That is a great suggestion. I can think of several titles on my bookshelf that would be a good fit there. Vered?
So I tend to read like the most boring thing I can possibly find, like an operating manual, like how to operate your dishwasher, or the technical specs for, you know, a tool that I may or may not own, or, you know, I tend to read those things, very, very technical. and not necessarily interesting because I can get through about four paragraphs and then lights out.
And if you're reading these to fall asleep, do you retain that information?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. Sort of. Yeah, it's weird how that happens. But yeah, I do generally tend to remember, you know, some of the important information that I've gleaned away from it. So, you know, I learned how to change out the taco valve on my heating system and my zone valves. It's like one of them went out and I was like, oh, I remember reading that in the manual. I think I can actually do this.
Practical in more ways than one. All right. So I would be remiss if we didn't take some time to specifically call out Alaska authors. Varad, Alaska Book Week just wrapped up recently. Is that correct?
Yeah. And we have a ton of local writers here in not just Anchorage, but in Alaska. We have a lot of writers and they're writing in all genres, from poetry to crime fiction to, you know, cooking, all kinds, everywhere in between. So I'm going to do another quick list.
Yes.
My first shout out are to two publishers here. One is Circuit Literary Press, Literary Journal, and Porphyry Press, run by Jeremy Pataki. They're two new publishers, relatively new, and cranking out some really great, great local literature and beyond. In terms of local writers, new writers, new voices, Shauna Pataki with a new book, Erica Watson with the book forthcoming, Jamie Bradbury, author of The Wild Inside, Martha Amore in The Quiet Season, also Jeremy Pataki, who's a poet, John Messick with his book Compass Lines, Aaron Halliwell, who's a poet and also runs Story Knife down in Homer, Judith Lethen, who is also a graduate of the UAA program, Wonderful Terrible God, that just came out. Dante Medema writing YA, Brooke Hartman writing children's books, Don Reardon, can't talk about any Alaska literature without talking about Don Reardon, with Without a Paddle and Raven's Gift and more forthcoming, Seth Kantner as well out in Kotzebue. Lily Tutsroylik, Alaska Reads recommendation, phenomenal writer with Stavulik. Kathleen Tarr, whose book We Are All Poets Here focuses on Thomas Merton from 1968 and takes place in Yakutat. There's so many more. Like, if I didn't mention the names of somebody, I'm so sorry, because there's just so many more. Sharon Amrex, also new writer writing historical fiction. There's so many, and we really need to celebrate. We really need to celebrate these. Ernestine Hayes, also Indigenous writer down in Southeast Alaska, comes to mind as well. Peggy Shoemaker up north. There's just so many. Like, there's too many names to rattle off a list. I could do nothing but speak names and lists. But these are all terrific writers with either existing books or new books on the way.
So if someone comes into the writer's block and they want a book by an Alaskan author, it sounds like you have lots of good options.
Tons of great options. We have an entire section dedicated just to Alaska authors, but also we have their books in the genres that they're at. So you can find them in multiple places in the store as well.
And for those who might not be aware, obviously this year's has sort of wrapped up, but what is Alaska Book Week?
So Alaska Book Week, obviously from the name, is sort of a celebration of literature. And the Alaska Center for the Book puts this together. And there's the National Center for the Book and also a local chapter for the Center for the Book. And it's really about celebrating writing, literacy, literature, and writers. So there are events all over the state. It's not just in Anchorage. Again, these are statewide things. The library has a lot of stuff. I'm hoping that you'll talk a little bit about that, because the library does so much with Alaska Book Week and planning for it. So it's just a great time to get involved and find events, author readings and panels and discussions and workshops and so many things going on.
All right, Christy, I saw you nodding. I know in October there is an Alaskan author event coming up. Do you have any recommendations? Want to tell us about that event?
Yeah, I can definitely talk about our local author showcase. This is happening Saturday, October 11th, from 1 to 4. It's going to be at Lusac Library. And it is a partnership between Alaska Public Library and the Alaska Center for the Book. It is a free event where 21 local authors on a wide range of topics, genres for adult readers will be there to show you their books, to talk about their books. It is a great way to meet Alaskan authors, find new titles. Most of these authors will be selling their books, so you can purchase books, probably get them signed maybe. So it's a great way to really dive into Alaska authors and learn some new ones, meet some people that you've never met, try some new genres. So yeah, we're really excited about that.
All right. And on the flip side, Alaska has a way to capture the imaginations of authors and readers who have never been to our state, or at least don't live here full time. I wonder if either of you have any recommendations for Alaska-themed books that might not be written by Alaskan authors.
That might may or may not be written by Alaskan writers. So I definitely tend to lean towards those that are written by Alaskan authors, because it's really irritating when somebody talks about an elm tree, like, you know, outside of Bethel or something like that. You know? So I definitely try to stick to the ones written by Alaskans. I tend to think of The Wild Inside by Jamie Bradbury, which is not necessarily directly like, you know, about Alaska specific, but it's definitely set here. And Sivulik, I think, is also just, Lily did such an amazing job with that book. It's just a gorgeous book. Seth Cantner, can't not think about Ordinary Wolves. And Don Reardon's writing, The Raven's Gift. I think every non-Alaskan should probably read those books. And of course, there's, you know, the classic Alaskan books as well. You know, I mean, anybody who's reading, you know, my brain has just escaped me at the moment.
We've talked about a lot of titles.
Yeah, we just escaped. Please forgive me, audience.
Christy, I know you had mentioned to me a pretty classic Alaskan book recently got an audiobook version. We were talking about that the other day.
Yes, Two Old Women, the beloved Alaska classic by mm-hmm. Velma Wallace. For a long time, I didn't think there was an audiobook version available, but I think one came out, and it was just in 2024. And I didn't know about it, but this summer I purchased copies for the library's digital collection. So if you are an audiobook lover and you want that classic Alaska book that everybody should read, we have access to that now on the Libby app. So that is another one that you can listen to.
All right. And you touched on something that I wanted to ask about, which is sort of curation of collections and how you make calls about what books to show people and what books to display. Christy, how do you go about sort of curating and managing the library's digital collection?
Oh, it's a tricky thing. Unfortunately, there's never enough money for all the books that we would love to buy. So we have to be... I try and find things that are going to have a lot of wide appeal, but also looking for those niche things that are really great that more people should be reading, but trying to strike that balance and find titles that represent the widest audience possible. So I want to make sure that I'm getting the nonfiction lovers, the romanticy lovers, the Alaskan authors. Just really trying to balance things as best as possible with the funds that we have.
And just like libraries and bookstores often have physical book displays, it sounds like you do some work on sort of digital book displays as well.
That is something we do a lot. We do a lot of digital book lists through our website, and then we share those out like on social media. So, you know, the Taylor Swift album is coming out here pretty soon. So we've got a book list tailored to the life of a showgirl. So things like that, Fat Bear Week, you know, things that are happening in the community, we try and come up with book lists that sort of match that.
And for the Showgirls album, it's a title for each track. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Wow, that's a lot of books.
It is.
Wow, yeah, that's a library.
Barid, how do you make calls about what books to put out on display at the Writer's Block?
So I have a book buyer who was a school librarian for a number of years, Neva Reese. And she curates, I'd say, 95% of the books that come in, and also loves putting them on display. So they are usually about sort of the current events, current issues. So we now have an entire space dedicated to books about the Constitution. You know, much like during COVID, we all became virologists overnight. And now with the current politics, we're all becoming constitutional experts. So we have brought in literature that speak to those topics. So we display things that way. Or if it's, you know, National Hispanic Heritage Month, we're going to have a lot, you know, a lot of books on Hispanic writers. Or if it's Pride, you know, we're going to have a bunch of books by LGBTQ that are going to be on display. And so we choose books sort of based on what's happening locally and nationally to sort of foster the curiosity of people and give them high quality literature that speaks to those issues and ideas.
And you're working with a relatively small space there.
Yes.
Yesterday when we were talking, you sort of mentioned that you don't necessarily have the width to have a broad collection like a library or a really big bookstore might.
Correct.
So how do you sort of make calls about what to include in that small space?
Well, I tell people very frequently, you might not find the specific book you're looking for, but you will find an excellent book in the genre of what you're looking for, no matter what it is, with the exception of a couple of genres that we just don't carry. But otherwise, every book is curated. Neva spends a lot of time reading, you know, as much as I'm sure she'd wish she could read all books, but you know what that's like. You know, you curate the book. So you're reading like the first chapter or the last chapter, or you're reading, you know, reviews, or you're reading blurbs, or you're getting recommendations from other people. Our staff, not just Neva, but the staff also recommends books, you know, so we get their ideas and we buy them that way. And customers, our customers tell us, like, you know, we've got regulars who come in and are like, oh my gosh, you know, I just read this and you guys definitely need to have it on the shelf, you know. And then we'll give it a look and be like, wow, sure enough, yeah, we will absolutely bring it in. So we curate the collection, you know, with a lot of different resources and a lot of help from both staff and the community.
All right. Well, the show is flying by. We need to get ready to take our second break. If you are just joining us or just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska. I'm Madeline Rose, and today we are discussing reading recommendations for the fall, the winter, and beyond that. We're discussing Alaskan authors, book-related events, libraries, bookstores, really anything to do with a love of literature. We are going to take another quick break, but when we come back, we will finish up our discussion on reading recommendations on Talk of Alaska. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Madeline Rose, and today we are discussing reading recommendations and the love of literature on Talk of Alaska. My guests today are Verid Mares, owner of the Writer's Block Bookstore and Cafe in Anchorage, as well as Christine Nelson, the Digital Services Librarian with Anchorage Public Library. So right before the break, we had started to touch a little bit on genres, and I wanted to kind of dig down into that topic a little bit more. Christy, do you have a favorite genre?
You know, I really don't. It's my favorite genre is whatever genre I happen to be reading at the moment. My tastes are run far and wide. I try and read a Western a year. I love romance. I love science fiction and fantasy and nonfiction. I read a lot of nonfiction. So I'm kind of all over the place as far as genre.
All right. Verid, do you have a favorite genre?
Yeah, I tend to go definitely towards nonfiction. And poetry. Those are my two go-to, you know, whether it's memoir or politics and history.
Okay. And how do you convince someone, say someone comes in and they have no idea what kind of book they want to read, how do you convince them to try out a new title or branch out on genres? We'll start with you, Verid.
So when somebody comes in and says they're looking for, say, a memoir, but they don't know exactly what they're doing, I will maybe push them towards like a lyric memoir, which will then get their interest into poetry. Or I will guide them to a fiction book that presents itself like a memoir or something that's funny, because I think humor is a really good way to do that. So I'm often, you know, pushing people towards, you know, David Sedaris if they want nonfiction and they're not used to reading nonfiction. Like, here, have some giggles. Have some laughs.
Christy, when someone comes in, when you're working at the reference desk, how do you talk to them about genres and maybe convince them to branch out a little bit?
So there's a few different things that I might try. Sometimes if they're really into one specific genre, I might try something that's a little bit genre adjacent. So sort of, you know, if they are really into modern day thrillers, we might try historical fiction that's got a bit of a thriller mystery twist to it. The other thing is sometimes I'll ask, well, what is it about that genre that you like? Is it the strong characters? Is it the world building? Is it the setting? And then I try and find a book in a different genre that has a similar, like a really strong character development or, you know, a really cool setting to try and give them sort of that same in, whatever it was that they liked about that other genre, try and give them that same sort of pathway.
All right. Well, we are getting some callers in, so I want to go take a second to go to the phone lines. Our first caller is Linda in Fairbanks. Linda, welcome to the show.
Hello.
All right. It sounds like you have a couple of book recommendations for us.
Twirled by Ed Yong, which is amazing. I was calling people about the footnotes. It's a view of animal senses and how that creates their own world. It's just amazing. His I Contain Multitudes About the Microbiome is wonderful. He just has good science, but amazing places he goes to with it. I would also remind people of Velma Wallace's Raising Ourselves, which is her biography. I have read some... an excellent juvenile fiction, but it's an adult book. It's As Long as the Lemon Trees Grow, and it's beautiful, about a heroic young lady in Syria. No Place Like Home.
All right.
One of the best books I've read on homelessness. This young man lived it and tells the story beautifully for everyone to understand. Rough Sleepers highlights a man who has done work, successful work, to help those homeless folks that are sleeping rough.
Well, thank you, Linda,
and,
for...
Louder Than Hunger is another juvenile book, but it is on people with disabilities and eating disorders. And it's written for young people and really is well done.
That's a great recommendation, actually. The Louder Than Hunger, we had the author of that book, I'm blanking on his name right now, but he was on our health-focused talk show, Line One, Your Health Connection, recently, actually discussing both his experience as well as resources for folks with eating disorders. I would highly recommend going to check that episode out. Linda, I did want to ask, the first author you mentioned, your phone line cut out a little bit, and we didn't quite catch the full author and book title. Would you mind repeating those for us, please?
Which one?
The very first author you mentioned.
An Immense World, Ed Yong, Yong.
Perfect. Thank you so much for calling in, Linda. We have a couple more callers to get to, so I want to go to Rick, who is in Anchorage. Rick, thank you for calling in.
Yes, I'm here. In regards to audiobooks, do you have a... Does it make a big difference who narrates it? And I have a friend who, she just goes to the ones that are narrated by a particular person that escapes my name, the name escapes me right now.
Christy.
But it does make a difference as far as inflection and...
Oh, it absolutely, absolutely does. I definitely have been transported by authors. I have definitely been taken out of the story by a bad author. A narrator. So yeah, definitely who is reading the story makes a big difference. I think one of my favorite examples of a great narration was Harlem Shuffle. I'm blanking on who the person was that read it, but that was a great audiobook listen.
One thing that, as an audio person, audiobooks really really makes it or breaks it for me is the mixing. Sometimes I've listened to an audiobook and one chapter will be like way louder than the last one, mm-hmm. and that can really take you out of it. Just a small thought there. We have some folks emailing in. We have an email from Bree here who says, "Good morning, Talk of Alaska and its listeners. I would just like to recommend reading any of the books authored by Lisa C. C is an author that explores historical fiction novels, typically based in different Asian cultures and in different Asian countries, such as Japan and Korea. Two of her favorite books she's read by C are The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane and The Island of Sea Women. She says they're very entertaining reads that have opened her eyes and knowledge into different cultures throughout history." Thanks for emailing, Bree. We just have a couple of minutes left, so I wanted to sort of open up the floor again, Verrett and Christy, if either of you have authors or titles that you haven't had a chance to call out yet, any big events coming up. Christy, let's start with you. Anything else that you want to flag?
So we do have our Expanding Horizons lecture series. That is a partnership with UAA professors. So our next lecture is Thursday, October 16th from 6 to 7:30. And it's Invisible Things in the Night Sky with Dr. Catherine Rollins. So that's coming up. And let's see, as far as book recommendations, we haven't done any horror yet. And of course, we are coming up on spooky season. So I just finished Chuck Tingle's latest book, Lucky Day. And that is sort of a mashup between The X-Files and Final Destination. So if you're into gory mayhem for this time of year, that's a good one for that.
All right. And Verrett, any last minute recommendations?
Sure. So I'm just going to give a shout out to some events that we've got coming up.
Yes.
We have on October 8th, Writing the Wild with Mary Beth Holloman and Martha Amore. They'll be talking about a conversation, talking about, you know, nature, wild writing, feminism, and the ups and downs of a writer's life. Then on October 9th, we have Leland Hale and Stan Jones, both sides now, talking about writing crime, crime fiction and crime nonfiction. Once a month, we also have an LGBTQ advocacy letter writing period, so you can come and talk about those issues, but also practice the art of writing letters on behalf. We have a poetry slam on the second Saturday of every month. So it's $100 cash prize.
Ooh.
You don't want to miss it. They are so much fun, so much fun. And it's open to the public to enter. Sign up at 5:30. Slam starts at 6. We've got 3 local celebrity judges. We have our open mic the third Thursday of every month. And that's open to all creative, whether it's music, spoken word, storytelling. It's open to everybody. So those are just a few of the events. And there's one author that I wanted to mention for poetry was Natalie Diaz, which is Postcolonial Love Poem. She's a Pulitzer Prize winner for that poem, for that book of poetry. And it's a dynamite book, and also anything by Joy Harjo.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you both so much for being here. Lots of great options for reading. Thank you to my guests, Christy Nelson, Digital Services Librarian with Anchorage Public Library, Verrett Mares, owner of the Writer's Block Bookstore and Cafe in Anchorage. I want to thank our editor and producer, Annie Feit, our audio engineer, Chris Hyde. On the phones today, Ava White helped us out. I'm Madeline Rose. Lori Townsend will be back next week with more Talk of Alaska. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.